All right. Well, have fun. Thank you for telling me when I knew about what was going on here that I knew myself. So,
sure.
Be well.
Yeah. All right.
Just to them. Bye.
Be well yourself. Stay safe. Okay. Opinions of those speakers. That was Stuart Levy up in Chicago. There is a bus and apparently still have some places, I guess, and we're ready to go with the labor hour. And thanks for listening. Enjoy the day. I better get going. Thanks again. WEFT, Champaign-Urbana, listener-sponsored, volunteer-operated.
Now the boat won't float. Hello, folks. Welcome to the May 19th, 2012 edition of the Illinois World Labor Hour, brought to you over the air on WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM and streamed worldwide at weft.org. As always, the views and opinions expressed during this hour of broadcasting are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinion of WEFT's manager, board of directors, or of Prairie Air Incorporated. Now here's Tom to acknowledge some of our underwriters.
This hour of programming is brought to you in part by Jobs with Justice, a coalition of unity and community groups working for economic justice and workers' rights. Jobs with Justice holds regular meetings on the third Saturday of every month. For more information or for the unemployed and underemployed helpline, call area code 217-328-2295. That's 328-2295. And this hour of programming is being brought to you by you listeners of WEFT and by the Brotherhood of the Maintenance of the Way. The Brotherhood of the Maintenance of the Way employees are proud to continue their support for the Illinois World Labor Hour. A democratic union, the BMWE, celebrates the voice for labor on WEFT. It is our hope that all workers may share the same benefits that they enjoy, such as living wages, job security, away-from-home expense pay, early retirement, Canadian-style health insurance, and guaranteed year-round work. And the Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by you listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois.
Thanks, Tom. I'm your host, Bob Polesny, here today with co-host Tom Thomas, who will have some workers' interest news for us. And later in the show, the Labor Hour Cultural Corner, Tom's poem of the week is one from his book, Cries for Justice, and is entitled, Till the Pyramids Are Dust. Also here with us today is Bill Gorell, founder of the Illinois World Labor Hour many years ago under a different name. Been through about two or three different name changes of this program over the years. Yeah, we're going by Illinois World Labor Hour right now. Just before we get into Tom's first news story here, I did get an email during the week. I know Paul Muth was talking to Stuart Levy about the NATO protest, and there is a bus going up there this Sunday. And Stuart, I think, mentioned that there's still room on there. My email says we have plenty of room for you. There's a new updated logistical information, including a new pickup location. My understanding is the bus is leaving at 7:45 a.m. sharp from in front of the Armory on campus at 505 East Armory Street. That's the corner of 5th and Armory. And they return, they expect to be back to the same spot sometime between 8 and 8:30 at night. It says a parking suggestion, since it is a Sunday, meter parking on campus will be free. There's a large lot at the campus library right across the street from the Armory on the corner of Armory and 6th Streets, and they're looking forward to a great trip to Chicago. And that's if you want to get on the bus heading up to the NATO protest tomorrow, 7:45 a.m. sharp, in front of the Armory on campus. And now here's Tom with some labor news.
Hey, Chicago is bracing for the worst and hoping for peace as world leaders and protesters gather for a two-day NATO summit that begins tomorrow. Thousands of police, including reinforcements from Philadelphia, Milwaukee, and Charlotte, will be deployed, a no-fly zone will be enforced, and some commuter trains will be canceled. Businesses are boarding up windows, Lakeshore Drive and the Art Institute will be closed, and the Postal Service is warning of delays in mail deliveries. The Chicago NATO Host Committee has spent some $65 million on the event, and they are saying the meeting should generate as much as $128 million in spending for their local economy. More than a dozen arrests have already been made, but Occupy Chicago and the Coalition Against NATO G8 War and Poverty Agendas has said that their rallies and marches will be peaceful. A group called Clown Block plans to protest wearing clown costumes and wielding pies. And what are you going to do with those pies? Police are estimating there will be up to 10,000 protesters involved, but the Occupy movement hopes to have as many as 50,000 of their activists on the scene. According to coalition activist John Eilsbaker, we believe that when there's an injustice, it's the duty of humanity to take action and speak out. According to Democratic Alderman Amaya Power, who is expecting peaceful protests, the city should be celebrating protesters' rights to protest. The 1968 riots are part of our history, but the city has come a really long way since then.
Thanks, Tom. And that was the Clown Block. And
the
they'll
Clown
be
Block is CLOWN-BLOQ.
And they'll be wielding pies, huh?
Yeah.
All right. And I will repeat what I just said a little bit ago. If you want to get on the bus leaving from Champaign to get up there for tomorrow's protest, it leaves at 7:45 a.m. sharp from in front of the Armory on campus. That's the corner of 5th and Armory, and they expect to be back at the same spot between 8 and 8:30 at night. So my first story this week is returning to Metropolis, Illinois. I got this information again from Mike Elk and the great website In These Times. And this is amid sabotage investigation. Honeywell lays off the plant's entire union workforce. Last Thursday, May 10th, at around 2 p.m., managers walked into Honeywell's uranium conversion plant in Metropolis, Illinois, and told workers, both union and non-union, they had to leave the plant immediately. Multiple workers present said a manager explained the sudden dismissal by noting that the company had to investigate sabotage of plant equipment. Since May 10th, Honeywell has allowed a little over half of the non-union salaried workers to return to work, and it has allowed 90 of its 100 non-union contractors to continue working in the plant, but none of the plant's 168 hourly union employees have been allowed to return to work. The company has informed them that they've been laid off indefinitely. All laid off union workers were immediately left without pay and without health insurance. In contrast, when Honeywell locked out the USW union workers back in June of 2010, it waited nearly three months to cut off their health insurance. It says the Metropolis plant is no stranger to contentious labor relations. In 2010 and 2011, it was the scene of a tense 13-month-long lockout of the United Steelworkers members, USW. That dispute was resolved last fall when the union ratified a new contract. Since then, however, the work environment has been tense. Several key USW Local 7-669 leaders have been fired by Honeywell. And Local 7-669 leaders say Honeywell is trying to bust the union. For many workers, the order by management to leave the plant felt like the lockout deja vu. I have been through a lockout and it felt like this. If this isn't a lockout, I don't know what it is, Local 7-669 President Stephen Leck says. But unlike a lockout, a tactic companies sometimes resort to when contract negotiations have stalled, laid-off union members cannot picket the worksite location. If the union did so, a company can claim that the union is engaged in an illegal strike and the union would then be subject to heavy fines. Lex said the union is looking into legal options and being very careful. The sudden layoffs may be a violation of the contract. And when asked about that, the managers at the plant hung up on the people conducting the interviews. So anyway, once more, problems going on down there at Metropolis at the Honeywell plant again. Tom?
Under new guidelines released Wednesday by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, up to 365,000 more children nationwide will be at risk for lead poisoning. In an important shift, the CDC cut in half the amount of lead that will trigger medical monitoring and other actions for children aged 1 to 5 years. It will be the first time in more than 20 years that the CDC has revised its action level on lead poisoning. Now, any child with more than 5 micrograms per deciliter of lead in their blood will be considered at risk. The CDC said on Wednesday that the new guidelines will increase the patient population across the U.S. to about 442,000 from the present 77,000 using the latest available data. The new levels, however, come with a huge caveat in that the CDC doesn't have the funding or the staff or control over the means to implement them. The CDC's funding for lead poisoning prevention was slashed 93% this year by Congress from $29 million in fiscal year 2011 down to $2 million. The new guidelines, if properly instituted and paid for, will not only help further prevent further exposures in children at risk, but will also protect future generations by cleaning up and cleaning out lead-making facilities and homes. Lead exposure is especially dangerous in children below six years of age because their brains are developing. It can cause behavioral problems, learning disabilities, and at higher levels can cause seizures and even death.
Thanks, Tom. And a story out of Joliet, out of the Chicago area. This actually kind of comes out of the Sun-Times. It says, just a week before Caterpillar workers in Joliet went on strike, the company reported record quarterly profits. At the same time that the company is prospering, management has proposed a final offer that the machinist union see as another round of concessions that follows the model of past contracts and workers took wage freezes and accepted lower pay rates for new employees during lean years. Caterpillar says it needs to base wages on what's competitive in the marketplace. But the contrast between corporate profits and the company's proposal for concessions made for a ready theme of corporate greed at a strike rally last Friday. Speaker after speaker talked about big corporate profits, millions of dollars in extra pay for company executives, and the plight of middle-class America. The machinist union, which represents about 780 workers at the Joliet facility, went on strike May 1st after a final proposal from the company that the union said included no set raises and even the potential for pay cuts in the next 6 years. It says here, you made the company more prosperous year after year. Tom Buffenbarger, president of the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, told strikers at the rally, they reward those that have never done what you do, and they want you to give back what you have earned. This is not about America going forward. This is about America going forward. No doubt striking machinists see themselves going backward if they accept the contract terms proposed by the company. They want to take away too much, as one of the workers. Steve Zabin marked a 1 year of CAT employment this week, but he was on strike, not on the job. He says over the six-year contract, we'd be down $4 an hour the way they want to do things. So that's going on up there in Joliet at the Caterpillar plant.
Well, the chairman of the Champaign Republican Party says he doesn't know how many ballots it will take to choose a nominee to replace Urbana Congressman Tim Johnson on the November ballot. Chairman Habib Habib said he thinks the selection will be narrowed down to three of the four finalists. Those three include Johnson's former chief of staff, Jerry Clark, and Rodney Davis, who works for Congressman John Shimkus, and Chicago lawyer and former Miss America, Erica Harold. Habib thinks the fourth of the finalists, Kathy Wasink of Shipman, who heads up a company that provides services to children with disabilities, does not have quite as much support as the others. GOP leaders from the 14 counties in the new 13th Congressional District are meeting today to make their selection.
Thanks, Tom. And I got one more story here about Colombian union leaders in danger. Says multiple death threats to labor union leaders and their families mark the implementation of the free trade agreement between the U.S. and Colombia today. John J. Rocastro of the Port Workers Union, Wilson Ferrer, president of the CUT Labor Federation in Santander, Johnson Torres Ortiz of the Sugarcane Cutters Union and Sinal Corteros, and Rene Morales Silva of the African Palm Oil Workers Union all received death threats this week. These threats come in an upsurge of anti-union violence, which is marked by the April 27th assassination of Daniel Aguirre, the Secretary of General of Sinal Corteros. Mr. Aguirre was the first union leader killed since Obama announced the implementation of the Free Trade Agreement at the Summit of the Americas. The Free Trade Agreement is being implemented without having meaningfully complied with the Labor Action Plan, an agreement signed by Presidents Obama and Santos in 2011 that was intended to make the FTA's passage contingent on improving the grave state of labor and human rights in Colombia. The U.S. Department of Labor has provided $2 million to the Labor Action Plan, but labor conditions for Colombia workers remain dire. The unionists were threatened over the weekend, all worked in sectors prioritized by the Labor Action Plan. In fact, trade unionists have received over 500 death threats, resulting in 29 assassinations, 7 in this year alone, since the Labor Action Plan went into effect. This is a tragic reminder that exercising labor rights, including the right to be directly contracted, can mean risking your life in Colombia. And they want you to get in touch with Ambassador P. Michael McKinley. He's the United States Ambassador to Colombia. And or both, Secretary Hilda Solis, she's with the Department of Labor in Washington, D.C., and let them know that we need the U.S. may need to take more action to protect these union workers and leaders in Colombia. So, Bill, you got anything there that you ready to go with? Or
No.
Okay. We'll listen to a little bit of headline news here, Workers Independent News.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. U.S. bankruptcy judge Robert Drain has denied Hostess Brands' motion to reject all Teamsters' labor contracts at the company. The Teamsters have said all along that they want to help save Hostess, but would vigorously oppose the company throwing out the contracts and imposing working conditions on Teamster workers. Teamsters Secretary Treasurer Ken Hall says it's a rare day when a bankruptcy judge denies a company request to destroy union contracts. Hall attributes that decision to the resolve of Teamster members. The Teamsters say they remain committed to finding solutions to labor agreements that will help Hostess survive bankruptcy. New labor rules that would have made union representation elections more fair for workers have been blocked by a federal judge. U.S. District Judge James Boasberg ruled that the National Labor Relations Board technically did not have a quorum when the board adopted the new rules last year. The Republican representative on the NLRB blocked a quorum by taking no action on the rules. Had he voted against or even abstained, a legal quorum would have existed. The court said its ruling was on a procedural technicality and not the substance of the new rules. The challenge to the rules was brought by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. An Occupy G8 People's Summit will be held by the Occupy Movement in Frederick, Maryland, May 18th, as the G8 Economic Summit unfolds at Camp David. The Occupy G8 People's Summit will provide a vision for sustainable democratic economic development. Speakers will lead discussions on the impact of concentrated wealth on global public policy, the effects of wealth inequality on people's well-being, and alternative structures that would close the wealth divide and create a more democratic, sustainable economy. Seniors are having a difficult time finding employment, according to a new report released by the Government Accountability Office. Jesse Russell reports.
The report finds that 55% of jobless seniors have been unemployed for more than 6 months. That's a significant increase of 23% since 2007. During a congressional hearing on Tuesday, Senator Herb Kohl of Wisconsin said lawmakers need to find new ways to address the issue of age discrimination. Losing a job and having difficulty of finding new work before hitting the age of 62 sees a significant decrease in retirement income. According to the GAO, those who are forced to retire at the age of 55, on average, receive 39% less than those who retire just 7 years later.
This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers and by OPEIU, the Office and Professional Employees International Union. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
And I think we're going to listen to a track from Jim Hightower here from this week. This is about some of the Koch brothers' public action committees.
Millions of children in our public schools will soon be hearing from the Heartland Institute. It might sound like a nice, above-board civic group promoting such salt-of-the-earth virtues as integrity and veracity, but quite the opposite. Heartland's mission is to promote mass ignorance on behalf of its self-serving and often heartless corporate backers. It is yet another secretive far-right-wing front group funded by the Koch Brothers Club of billionaires who are intent on establishing an unbridled corporate plutocracy in our country. But this outfit was recently outed by someone who released a trove of its internal documents, including details of its multimillion-dollar stealth campaign to undermine the teaching of climate change science in America's schools. Heartland is creating an anti-science curriculum to poo-poo the facts of global weather change and planning to turn the issue into a major culture war in local school districts across the country. falsely claiming that, quote, principals and teachers are heavily biased toward the alarmist perspective, and that climate change is a major scientific controversy, the Institute and its right-wing allies intend to pressure school boards to adopt its denial curriculum, forcing teachers to water down the science. The dishonesty of Heartland's campaign includes its shielding of the special interests behind it. When the campaign comes to your area, it won't tell local people that the Koch brothers, who own America's largest private oil corporation and are vituperative opponents of regulations to restrict their emissions of global warming pollutants, are putting up $200,000 for the effort this year. This is Jim Hightower saying, to get to the dark heart of this insidious campaign and to stand for science and truth in teaching, go to the National Center for Science Education. You can reach them at www.ncse.org. ncse.org. Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, hightowerlowdown.org.
And we come to that point in the program, the Illinois World Labor Hour Cultural Corner. And Tom's poem for this week from his book Cries for Justice is entitled, Till the Pyramids Are Dust.
Swing that hammer and push that saw. Work with fingers bloody and raw. Carry bricks with an aching back or carry heavy wood to stack. And soon enough you too will know the miseries through which we go. Since the sunrise of history, the story is no mystery. You either have to be a slave, and for the boss always behave, or else be put out in the street, wondering how you're going to eat. The time is now to rearrange, to stand together for the change, to end the cannibalism of the curse of capitalism, to see that every child eats and none are living in the streets. Free enterprise, they called the dream. We must pursue that as a team, till none are hungry or homeless, and each cold house with heat is blessed. We must pursue it with a lust, until the pyramids are dust. Till the Pyramids Are Dust was written at the Poets Loft in Champaign, Illinois, either late in 2011 or early in 2012, and was brought to you live today, May 19th, 2012, here on the Illinois World Labor Hour on WEFT 90.1 FM in Champaign, community radio for East Central Illinois.
Excellent, Tom. So you wrote that poem like right about the stroke of midnight on the New Year's Eve?
Yes, sometime around that time.
Good, good, excellent. I got a couple public service announcements here for sure. As always, don't forget, tune in to Labor's View TV on local Comcast cable channel 6. Labor's View TV is this Sunday, every Sunday at 4 o'clock on Comcast cable channel 6. Features our own host, David Johnson, and friend of the show, Jim Iman. They have always got some great topics and great videos and stuff like that. Also got another PSA about the East Central Illinois Jobs with Justice. The Mother Jones chapter is announcing a direct action training, and that's going on next Saturday, May 26th, from 9:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. The location is at the Urbana Free Library, Lewis Auditorium in the basement. There is a cost, although breakfast and lunch is provided. And I do know that they're trying to get scholarships for people to get some people to pay for those that don't have the means to pay the fees for this. If you want to go, you can or find out more information, you can email dlj725@hughes.net. That's H-U-G-H-E-S. Or you can give them a call at 217-721-0583. There's going to be several presenters there. David Johnson, Carpenters for a Democratic Union, IWW, Jobs with Justice, and the Illinois World Labor Hour, and Labor's World View TV. Also, Pat Simpson, she's involved with Jobs with Justice. She's an Emerita Professor of Industrial Relations at Loyola University. She's also involved with the Illinois World Labor Hour. Dave P. is going to be there. He's a longtime precarious worker, troublemaker, and wobbly. And also Paul Gallagher, he's a former prosecutor turned peace and justice activist. And they're going to teach you such topics as the basics of direct action, critical dimension, dimensions of successful actions, using the media to your advantage, scouting and logistics of an action, legal ramifications of different types of actions, and civil disobedience. Once again, that's going on next Saturday, May 26th, 9:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Urbana Free Library, Lutus Auditorium in the basement, put on by the East Central Illinois Jobs with Justice, Mother Jones chapter, announcing a direct action training. And one more public service announcement here. There's an emergency pension lobby days going on next week. Next week is a emergency pension lobby week in Springfield. The event is hosted by the We Are One Coalition, of which the IEA is a part. And you want to see below from the IEA headquarters. It says there, we're asking you to encourage retired IEA members or members who are out of school to volunteer in a lobbying effort along with ASME and We Are One Illinois Labor Coalition partners scheduled for the week of May 21st. There will be kickoffs and briefings held each day in a tent behind the Illinois State Federation of Labor building that's located at 534 South 2nd Street in Springfield. And the schedule for the week is May 21st is the kickoff briefing at 2 p.m. Tuesday, May 22nd through Friday, May 25th, there's a kickoff briefing at 11 a.m. And volunteers are invited back to the tent for an informal debrief after lobbying, and box lunches will be provided Tuesday through Friday. Please note there are no meals provided on May 21st. And once again, that's the IEA, the We Are One Coalition, and they're doing a emergency pension lobby days next week in Springfield, Illinois.
Yeah, you know, I thinking about these pensions, and I got a thing in the mail about the laborer's pension the other day where it's in the red zone. And so they've cut back on a few things, but I don't know. I don't feel as worried about our pension as I would be if I was a state employee, or for that matter, people who work in most companies, even if they still have defined benefit pensions, because a lot of pensions have been destroyed when right. companies have said, oh, God, we have to have this money. You know, we're going broke or whatever, and they can just take it. And that is one thing. You know, at very least know that there's nobody that can take the pension like that. You know, the laborers, because it's the laborers,
mm-hmm.
you know, and there's a board that runs it, a board of trustees, and it's half contractors and it's half union people.
Oh, really?
And nobody, there's no way that anybody can get any money out of it, as far as I can tell. You know,
does the government oversee any of that?
Well, yeah. It's as a matter of fact, these are called Taft-Hartley
right.
Pensions. Mm-hmm. So I guess it might have been one of the good parts of the Taft-Hartley Act. But what I'm just saying is that, you know, I don't know why all these other unions allow other entities to control their members' pensions. I don't know.
I don't know. There also seems to be a trend here, because I had a story that I didn't really get to today, but it says the waste company locks out Teamsters in a bid to eliminate pensions, and this is going on over in Evansville, Indiana. It says following a private sector trend, Republic Services / Allied Waste insists on 401k plans. And at 9 p.m. Tuesday night, the country's second largest waste disposal company locked out 79 workers out of their jobs. The day before, Republic Services Allied Waste gave the Evansville, Indiana workers an ultimatum: accept management's last, best, and final offer or be locked out of work. The union, the Teamsters Local 215, blames the lockout on management's insistence on permanently eliminated workers' pensions. It's a kind of extraordinary move in labor relations to lock workers out unilaterally, says Louis Mazzilla, assistant director at the Teamsters Capital Strategies Department. Anyway, what they're doing is, it says here, while strikes decline in the United States, statistics suggest that lockouts are on the rise. And Teamsters Local 215 says it's offered to extend the current contract, but Republic insisted on eliminating pensions and replacing them with a 401k. And they're basically saying that when pensions are mainly funded by companies, 401ks are basically funded by the workers themselves, and you know sometimes a company will match it. But 401ks are typically subject to much more market fluctuations, and you can lose quite a bit of money in there as well. You know, but that seems to be a growing trend that a vast majority of the companies these days are moving to away from company-based pensions into 401k-based retirement.
What needs to happen is some laws need to be written that when a person pays a certain amount into any kind of a trust fund, that person has that amount. It's not going to go down for any reason.
Right, right. It's
Either that or we just need a much stronger social pension that covers everybody. In a
right.
similar matter that we need a we need single-payer pension. A mm-hmm. real one, not Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Social Security doesn't really cut it. It's a supplement pretty much for most people, even though it's with the 401k situation, though, I'm sure that Social Security is people are starting to rely more on it.
For some people, that's all they've got coming in is Social Security. And that's what keeps some of these little old grandmas living, you know, is what they got coming in on Social Security. It says here, in general, defined benefit pensions are funded entirely by management as part of an employee's compensation. A pension fund promises a certain annual payout to retirees with sufficient years of service based on the length of their tenure. 401ks are individual investment funds funded by employee contributions and sometimes matching contributions by employers. And again, they're seemingly getting away from more and more of the pensions and more towards 401ks.
Yeah, and really a lot of, for example, the concrete truck drivers around here went on strike. Oh, geez, what was that, like 10? The late 90s.
Yeah.
And that was an issue, but they didn't get it. They didn't get
right.
their defined benefit pension. Still stuck with 401ks. I remember several years ago I was talking to an iron worker, and he had lost a bunch of money out of his retirement,
mm-hmm.
you know, because
mm-hmm.
of the stock market. Now, I don't know, laborers, we do have our defined benefit pension, which is a good thing instead of that. And we've also got an annuity.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it was pretty good. It up until 2008, or it might have been 2009, I'm not sure which fiscal year it was, how they do that, but it was making like 6%.
Really?
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Mm. And that was the only year that it didn't make any money.
Yeah.
When everything went completely to hell. And my biggest problem with it right now, and I guess what might be happening is money's having to be spent on health insurance, but they've cut back on. See, we don't get a vote on this or anything. It's just that the union does this. The local, the mm-hmm. guys running the local decide these things. Apparently, a larger part of our raise is having to go for insurance. That's the only thing mm-hmm. I can see, because they're cutting back on what they were putting into our annuities, and that's why. And we're not getting that much of a raise on the paycheck either anymore.
Yeah.
So that's
a lot of times when companies are nearing bankruptcy or wanting to declare bankruptcy, they raid those pension funds or they completely. I did a story a couple of weeks ago about the Hostess company.
Right. Yeah, that's what
Teamsters,
I was saying earlier.
And they basically just quit funding that pension fund like 9 months ago or something, and now they still are failing to resolve a contract here, and in the meantime they haven't been even funding the pension fund for the Teamsters anymore. So a lot of shenanigans go on there. How about if we take a quick musical break? Here's a song by the Flowbots, Stand Up.
Stand stand up. We shall not be moved, except by a child with no socks and shoes. If you got more to give, then you've got to prove. Put your hands up, and I'll copy you. Stand up. We shall not be moved, except by a woman dying from a loss of food. If you've got more to give, then you've got to prove. Put your hands up, and I'll copy you. We still don't understand. Thunder and lightning flash back to when we didn't fund the dam. Didn't fund the dam levy? No wonder, man. Now a whole damn city's torn asunder, man. Underwater, but we still don't understand. We see hurricane spills overrun the land through gaps you couldn't fill with 100 tons of sand. No, we still don't understand. We've seen planes in the windows of buildings crumbled in. We've seen flames sending chills through London, and we've sent planes to kill them, and some of them are children, but still we crumble in the building. Underfunded, but we still don't understand. Under God, but we kill like the son of Sam. But if you feel like I feel about the son of man, we will overcome. So stand up. We shall not be moved, except by a child with no socks and shoes. If you've got more to give, then you've got to prove. Put your hands up, and I'll copy you. Stand up. We shall not be moved, except by a woman dying from a loss of food. If you've got more to give, then you've got to prove. Put your hands up, and I'll copy you. I said put your hands up, and I'll copy you. Put your hands up, and I'll copy you. If you've got more to give, then you've got to prove. Put your hands up, and I'll copy you. We shall not be moved, except by a child with no socks and shoes, except by a woman dying from a loss of food, except by a freedom fighter bleeding on a cross for you. We shall not be moved, except by a system that's rotten through, neglecting the victims and ordering the cops to shoot. High treason, now we need to prosecute, so stand up. We shall not be moved, and we won't fight a war for a fossil fuel. Of times like this, but you wanna plot a coup. Put your hands up, and I'll copy you. Stand up. Stand up. We shall not be moved unless we're taking a route we have not pursued. So if you've got a dream and a lot to do, put your hands up, and I'll copy you. I said put your hands up, and I'll copy you. Put your hands up, and I'll copy you. If you've got a dream and a lot to do, put your hands up. Now shake, shake a Polaroid dream. Nightmare negatives develop on the screen. We sit back and wait for the government team. Criticize they, but who the fuck are we? The people want peace, but the leaders want war. Neighbors don't speak, peek through the front door. House representatives preach, stay the course.
It's time for a leap of faith.
Once more, put your hands up high if you haven't abandoned. Hope that the pen stroke's stronger than the cannon. Balls to the wall, nose to the grindstone.
My interrogation techniques leave your mind blown.
Place your bets, let's speak to the enemy. Don't let him pretend that we seek blood. And who's we anyway? Kimosabe, mighty warlord, wanna be free. God, a threat for a threat leaves the whole world terrified. Blow for blow never settles the score. Word for word, it's time we clarify. We the people did not want war.
And you are listening to the Illinois World Labor Hour here on WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM and streaming at weft.org. I want to let you know about another educational program kind of going on here. The University of Illinois Program on Grievance Arbitration for Unions. This is part of the School of Labor and Employment Relations, part of the Labor Education Program. They've got this going on July 8th through the 13th. It says, how do you represent your union in arbitration? What is the difference between discipline and contract interpretation? How important is the original grievance filing? Answers to these and more. This is open and valuable for everyone, regardless of your experience, union position, or international union. This is going on July 8th through the 13th. All classes will be held at the University of Illinois School of Labor and Employment Relations, 504 East Armory Avenue in Champaign. there are some fees involved, and the fees do go up after June 10th here. But you can check it out online, U of I Labor Education Programs. Labor Education Relations is at www.ler.illinois.edu. And you should be able to find what you're looking for there. It says here that the Labor Education Program at the School of Labor and Employment Relations was formally established in early 1947 in response to the educational demands of workers belonging to newly formed unions. Working within the school, LEP operates as the only statewide labor education program, serving over 2,000 union members annually. Over time, the program's mission of worker outreach, education, and participatory action research has expanded to serve low-wage and other marginalized workers in addition to union members. And once again, their program's going on July 8th to the 13th. And topics include survey of the arbitration process, its sources, structure, pros and cons, selecting an arbitrator, how to research the choice, preparing the case, documents, witnesses, theory of the case, just cause and discipline and discharge, and use of evidence. And it's going to teach you some presentation skills and some stuff about mock hearing with time for preparation and debriefs with instructors and professional arbitrators. That's U of I program on grievance arbitration for unions going on July 8th through the 13th. Might be worthwhile checking into if you're a union member or whatnot. Maybe you can get your union to pay for you to go and learn some interesting topics there.
Just do what you're told.
Yeah, that solves all our problems, doesn't it, Bill? All right. What else we got going here this week?
I don't know. That's it. I really start wondering sometimes if perhaps, I kind of don't like saying this, if we're just being involved in this labor stuff at this point is being involved in too narrow of a place considering what's all at stake in the world right now.
Right.
I mean, I really do fear, maybe not fear it so much as think that we are possibly really dealing with here within maybe not a foreseeable future, but perhaps within lifetimes, some lifetimes here, maybe not mine. But unfortunately, I think these things, once they get underway, can go very, very fast when they reach a tipping point. And that is actually the collapse of civilization.
Yes.
The collapse of the industrial technological civilization that we all rely on.
Yeah. Yeah.
For example, you know what one of my huge fears on that is?
Mm-mm.
Is that in some time in my lifetime, it might come to the point where I couldn't get my dentures. Yeah. I'm serious.
Yeah.
Because I do not, people are finally, you know, maybe starting to realize, man, that this is a finite planet.
Right.
And that a complete civilization based only on the growth of obviously the population and the growth of the amount of material that is used, you know, cannot be sustained on a finite planet.
Right, right.
Or, you know, I would assume eventually in a finite universe if there, I don't know, well, I better not get into cosmology at the moment. But I, you know, I am glad to see that is one reason that I'm happy to see that there is a consortium of private people who are, including James Cameron, the film director, who are going to go out and are proposing anyway to start mining asteroids.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is one of the biggest biggest problems with the left.
Yeah,
and that, and another one I'm going to add too, and this is one a lot of people are really touchy about, and that's population.
Right. Yeah.
because they start thinking eugenics right away. And I just really feel like, I don't know, maybe we're dividing, wanting to divide up this pie. And we're talking about money, like, for example, during that musical break, you know, we were discussing the $605 trillion in derivatives that are
right
somehow in the financial universe.
Atmosphere, yeah.
Not even that much money in existence.
Right.
Well,
right.
Yeah, I mean, it's a gross domestic product of the solar system, maybe, or the galaxy. I don't know.
For the next 30 years, I think, actually, yeah.
And it's just a ridiculous thing. It just shows that basically everything that we're dealing with is pretty much a matter of human created,
mm-hmm.
you know, social reality. And we need to share more in that creation. But should we be doing that in the role? What should our role be? Just workers? Or is it getting way beyond that? I mean, to the point of, survival.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if there is somehow any great disruption of our technology, be that through natural disaster, human error, or the scarcity of any one component.
Right.
You know, we're looking at oil, of course, right now.
Mm-hmm.
That will mean billions and billions of deaths.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, from starvation.
Yeah.
You know, as well as more disease and so on, as we are not able, would not be able to transport things. And I, you know, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you have these. I don't know. I just really, if I had kids, I don't have any descendants. Okay, if I had descendants, you know, I would be. I don't know. Maybe I'm just too paranoid. But I really, and that's, I'm starting to plan my life around that. I mean, do I sound like one of those survivalist guys?
I was
going
to say,
you're
starting to sound just like the extreme right wing, Bill.
Yeah,
you know,
they're ruining some gold.
They're ruining the planet for my kids. They'll be saddled with debt for the rest of their lives. You know,
well, no. What I was trying to say there is the debt is illusory. It's an illusion. All
right.
Money is an illusion.
Yes, it is.
You know, even if you have gold, gold is the biggest illusion of all. It's worthless. What can you do with gold?
Yeah.
You know, do you need a really very malleable, good conductor? You have gold. If you need food, you need to have food.
Right.
You know, I mean, gold is, you know, at least you can wipe your butt with a dollar bill. You can't do that too well with gold.
Right. No.
You know?
No, you can't.
You could possibly even eat one if you absolutely were starving and all
a
you
dollar
had
bill?
Were dollar bills. Yes,
yeah,
but please use it. Do it before you use it for the other.
Yeah, yeah,
mentioned there.
Yeah,
but I don't know. I don't know what people think. I don't think people think about this at all. For one thing,
you're right. You know, the world is a finite place, and sometimes we're treading on things. You know, whether it's global warming or, you know, climate change or something like that. Like you say, the scarcity of resources and, you know, we're sometimes really pushing the limits here of what we got and how much longer it's going to last.
Yeah, I think we really need to start thinking more and doing more when it comes to space travel and population. You know, and I know people are starting to think, oh, you're just going to, you know, and you just want, you know, and it's going to be racist and everything. No, it's not. I mean, I'm not talking about a China thing where, you know, you can only have two children and then it's forced abortions. No, I'm talking about education.
Right.
I'm talking about supplying people with the means of contraception whenever possible. I'm talking about giving women more power in traditional societies.
Yep.
you know, and so on and so forth, because those are the things that prove that population goes down, and also, you know, improving the security of people. Because that was always the big thing with rural families. You wanted to have a lot of kids so that they could, you know, work the farm, you know, take care of you when you're older, so on and so forth. And we don't really need that now.
No.
And then when it comes to space travel, I know people think, oh, my God, who's this Newt Gingrich now? No, I don't mean a base on the moon. That's about the dumbest thing. You know, and even Obama was, you know, he's skipping the moon completely. He's talking about going to Mars.
Right.
And, but this thing with the asteroids, it's the key thing. You know, because what we want to do is we want to get off the planet.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we need to start doing it quickly. And one of the greatest things that we could do would be put all of our industry in orbit. You have unlimited solar power.
There you go. Yeah.
You know, you do not have to fight gravity. You could basically make a lot of things out of tin foil.
Yeah.
You know, and we could just eventually, man, Earth could just be like a park.
There you go. Yeah.
You know, we move all our industry and ourselves into orbit.
Essentially, that's what the Earth was before we started screwing it all up, was a big park.
Right.
You know? We came along and started building buildings and roads and bridges and dams and, you know, yeah, and messing it up.
Yeah, and what we could do, and then, you know, and this is a gigantic jobs program, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we could probably negotiate some really big vacation time so we could come down and spend a couple of months on Earth just hanging out and, you know, enjoying the naturalness. And
Bill, you've talked about this many times on the show about, you know, green jobs programs and stuff, you know, building solar panels and building wind farms and things, and the number of people we could employ and getting off of our carbon-based fossil fuels and stuff like that for cars and everything. And it would create thousands, hundreds of thousands of jobs.
Well, there's a bunch of people out in my local. I don't know how many. Even this one friend of mine, he was working there as a teamster, working on a wind farm right now over by, was it Oakwood or Oakland? I get those oak places mixed up, I guess.
Oakwood's over by 74. Oakland's a little further south, I believe.
Yeah, and I think it's a good thing, and it's... And what I like about it, once it's up and running, that's pretty much it. You just got like some maintenance to take care of it. You don't have to keep sticking fuel in it all the time, you know? Yeah.
Well, I think we're going to kind of wrap up on that note and go out with a song from John Lee Hooker Jr., People Want Change. And we'll grab the phone and let Matt and Sean get in here for Occupy the Airwaves. So till next week, stay tuned, WEFT. Champaign 90.1 FM.
Scandals out.